I'll be saying some things. I mentioned the demonstration at the rally and overnight vigil at the courthouse about immigration issues. I'm not covering that much today. Got a new item from Tex Justice Network that I haven't listened to yet. I might feature that tomorrow because they're going to be talking about migrant policy as reparations. I would guess that would be in the broad strokes, the devastation visited upon the Third World, the South, lesser developed countries, by the northern economy, behemoth, which the U.S. runs now. It wasn't always the case. It used to be the U.K., and I think a lot of the Brexit stuff is really about nostalgia for empire, but that's just me. Okay, was that a full disclaim? Well, I have a sad note. A volunteer here at the station has passed. She's been in care for a while, and that's Joyce Volkman. Came back from some time in Portland, out on the West Coast. Not the East Coast. There is a Portland. I always have to ask, and everybody says, what? But anyway, it's a somber note, and I'm kind of livening up. She was on the programming committee, and she was busy with the Prairie Crossroads Blues Society. We're putting on that Blues Fest in the fall. Well, not the fall. Coming up pretty soon, actually. But she succumbed, and it's quite a sad note. I was going to say, if you went to any blues shows, I would always see her with this signature fedora-like hat. So maybe you don't know her, but it was pretty unique. So you might have seen her out at some clubs or some fests or something. Okay, 2 minutes in, I've got two commentaries from Amia. I like them both. They're sort of bipartisan. One rails on Biden is time. And the other one is kind of about hate as a motivation. I haven't looked at the new book by great writer Matt Taibbi, who spent some of his formative years in journalism in Russia during the pillaging of the economy. He's got a lot to say about that. But this is a book called Hate Incorporated, so I think that's kind of what Mumi is on about. Amy Goodman's got a great longer piece, 7 minutes long, got to program that, on Puerto Rico. She's been covering it all week. Flashpoints had almost exclusively Puerto Rican coverage this week. In fact, they were hyping a Max Blumenthal segment, and turns out they didn't really air it, so I'm still looking for that. I might feature that tomorrow, too, at 5 o'clock. They said it was the most well-received and one of the most amazing pieces. Okay, about Mueller, I listened to it all. The business about, this is the end of my presidency, I'm blanked, came up twice. I believe it was both minority Democrats who raised it. They said, I'm effed. And I've been sending that around. I didn't hear anybody comment on it much. There was a lot of bad faith there. I speculate it was more about the fact that Mueller was plugged into financial crimes and apparently didn't take it and run with it. It's not in my purview. It's outside of my purview. I can't comment on that. Got Colleen Raleigh, who's a critic of Mueller when she worked under him. She was on the cover of Time magazine in 2002. Along with three other women whistleblowers. That's when it was good to be a whistleblower. She blew the whistle about why 9/11 happened, the idea that people had their hair on fire and were not getting any hearing from the man in office, et cetera. She was out of Minnesota, which I think she still is, in Minneapolis, Colleen Raleigh. She says something, you know, about this whole provenance of the Steele report, and I think there ought to be an investigation of it. I don't trust William Barr to do it, but maybe the Democrats ought to investigate some of that themselves, but I don't know. They got a lot to investigate already. I think they should make the argument that we're doing the impeachment just to, we don't expect it to go anywhere, but it's easier to get documents. You don't have to go to the court. At least I think that's the case. It would expedite their investigation. They should say, we're just doing it because of that. And maybe after they spend all this, wasting all this time in courts, they would agree to that. Another longer feature is an excerpt of a talk. I've been talking a little bit on and off, probably not as much as I should be. All this nostalgia for the moon launch brings me back to the Arming the Heavens thesis and book by Jack Mano of the Syracuse Peace Community, who investigated myriad documents, the mad fancy of what space was going to be for the warfare state. And there was always this illusion that NASA was isolated and that it was a peaceful program, but the upsizing of the space shuttle, which I think I did talk a little bit about, but it's warranted. It's not really germane to the moon launch, but it is about the space program, was upsized to a ridiculous size, and that was mainly, Mano makes the argument that it was mainly because of the intention of military use, of rapid deployment shuttle, basically. There's no reason to take everything with you. It's much better to dock with your supplies in space, unless you are rapidly deploying on the continents, whichever one you choose. So that's the thesis, Arming the Heavens. It's a good book. It was published in 1984. I think there's some material about it in this Space for Peace site. I think it was formed in Britain, but one of the conveners of it is a ex-Air Force, I don't know what his rank was, Bruce Gagnon, G-A-N-N-O-N. He's on Facebook. You can find him. And in fact, it's his birthday today, so you could friend him on his birthday. They're rolling out a new YouTube channel for the Global Network Against Weapons in Space. That's not the full title. I'm forgetting it now. But that gets you there. Space4peace.org. And, a British guy named Davis is presenting a talk. It's highly graphic ridden. It's well produced. I'm trying to get people to go to the YouTube thing and watch it because it's quite well done. But I've got an excerpt. Kind of stands on its own without the images. And the more I talk now, the less I'll be able to get that on in the end. I'll have some announcements through. We've got, like I said, two segments from Mumi. I'm going to go ahead and do that, even though I probably should little changes in the interface really hang me up when I'm trying to do something while not thinking about it. Mumi Abu-Jamal, who's got a new case, and if you haven't heard me say it, he revealed in a commentary not so time long ago that he is losing his vision. It's really sad. I hope he gets whatever he needs to remediate that and have him live with it, with the disability, because he's a prolific reader and writer, and I would miss it. So that's partially why I'm playing two commentaries. I was happy to see that he's busy with his work. It is an oral media, and he's got a great voice. So he's got a new trial coming up, too, which is great. I'm going to go to the actual case of the police death in Philly.
Biden, his time. The candidacy of Joseph R. Biden Jr. for President of the United States has caused multiple reactions across the land. Biden, who enters his 77th year of life, draws warm feelings from blacks for his relationship and partnership with the nation's first black president, Barack Hussein Obama. While this casts a warm glow over the 8 years of the Obama administration, it ignores Biden's long years as a U.S. senator. That long period, which has consumed most of Biden's life, should give us reason to support or caution to avoid a Biden presidency. Biden spent over 30 years as senator from Delaware, and as such, has involved himself in hundreds, if not thousands, of issues. We will only address a few here. Biden voted to support the notorious crime bill of the 90s, which sprouted prisons across the nation's landscape. He supported a remarkable bankruptcy bill that disallowed discharge of college debts. He supported the disastrous Iraq War. Now, people can make mistakes, as all humans do. And Biden has said, if elected, he'll straighten out some of these errors. But isn't the presidential election a promotion? And isn't the time for wisdom and foresight before one votes, not after? Biden's senatorial career is chock full of examples of serving the rich and the powerful at the expense of the poor and the oppressed. His positions now are fueled by ambition and Democratic desperation to beat Trump. It ain't about the people. It's about one person, Biden. Do you elect someone who has failed you for decades again, again, and again? From Imprisoned Nation, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal. These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio. Mad at the world, fearful of the future. As an American president stomps in the ground in mock anger, decrying the alleged wrongs of young women, he is tilting at windmills, fighting battles he can never win, for he is really wrestling with the future, trying in vain to bring back the dead past. Journalists, mostly white ones, of course, pose the explosive question, is the president a racist? All the while knowing that with his past, the answer is obvious. Is the Pope Catholic? Few, if any, black reporters pose this question. You doubt Trump's deep antipathy to black people. The nation is roiled in conflict, a chaotic stew of misplaced anger used by dangerous demagogues generations ago to exploit white fear of dark others. The president is a man from another era fighting against the mass confusion of modernity. Try as he might, the future belongs to the young, not the old. We are watching, in agonizing slow motion, the demise of the Trump generation. It is spitting hatred, yes, but beneath is a thin veneer of fear. He and they are mad at the world and fearful the world to come. From Imprisoned Nation, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal. These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio.
Okay. I'll suppress myself momentarily here. I'll get another announcement. Have any announcements you know about? If you know my Facebook, send me a message. I'll check and text me, or you can even call me on the phone, though sometimes it's a little difficult. Go to Colleen Rowley, whistleblower of the year, along with three other women in 2002 over stuff she revealed about what was going on inside of the FBI leading up to 9/11. She's a critic. She associates, I don't know if she's officially with the group Veterans Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, William Binney, and drawing a blank. I haven't played anything by him in a while. It'll come to me later when I'm off the mic. They're the ones that say that they've looked at it in the so-called leak of the initial DNC documents were a leak and not a hack because of the transfer rate that was recorded in the documentation. So an inside job in some way. Disgruntled DNC official. There's other people that attest to that. And And it should have been released just before the DNC's convention, too. Okay, Colleen Raleigh, with returning from holiday. He didn't give a review. He's featured a couple of poets on this week, including Carolyn Forché. Speaking of poets, it was a poet that brought to my attention that the library school has been far from being a progressive unit as it has been in the past, and is taking a turn. They hired a woman who has connections to DHS, Homeland Security, that is. I haven't read her CV, but maybe I'll look at it. Well, but there's enough there to make one wonder whether this is a librarian or a or what. All right, here's Dennis Bernstein introducing Colleen Raleigh. I'm sure he'll get something that I left out.
Somebody who knows a lot about this, and we've spoken to before, is Colleen Raleigh. Colleen Raleigh is a retired FBI special agent and division legal counsel who's made 2002 memo to the FBI director, then FBI director Robert Mueller, exposed some of the FBI's pre-9/11 failures. She was named to be Time Magazine's Person of the Year in 2002. And Colleen Raleigh, welcome back. I know you've been watching the hearings. You have stressed that most major media is ignoring, has been ignoring a key ruling by a judge against Mueller that really has everything to do and plays into what we heard today. You want to sort of set this up for us? Welcome.
Yeah, thanks. Actually, one congressman did bring it up. I was actually kind of surprised, but a couple of weeks ago, a court order by Judge Friedrichs in one of Mueller's two indictments of the so-called Russians, and you have to put the Russians in quotes because it's almost always intended to vilify the Russian government when they say the Russians instead of the Russian people. And in this case, when Mueller's indictment of the Internet Research Agency, which is part of the Facebook ads, you know, and today they laid that on thick, by the way. They exaggerated that it reached 1.4 million people, which is not true. It was millions of dollars, you know, by Gareth Porter has written and others have written. Aaron Mate and Gareth Porter have said this didn't amount to anything compared to what is normally spent in a campaign. Plus, the Facebook ads themselves didn't even help elect Trump. They were things that, you know, went both ways with Hillary Clinton. They were issues not involving the campaign at all. Anyways, they made a big deal out of this Internet Research Agency, and because Mueller had indicted them, not expecting them to ever challenge it because they're Russians. You know, are they going to come over here? It was the prosecution and sacrifice jurisdiction, you know, themselves to the jurisdiction of the court. He didn't think they would come, but one did hire the owner hired attorneys. And the judge in that case had a court order that was unsealed a couple of weeks ago that almost held Mueller in criminal contempt. It did sanction, it warned Mueller. It said, you know, we won't hold you in contempt because you haven't gotten a warning. But you can't conflate the fact that this IRA was Russians, but they were Russian individuals. In all likelihood, it was a troll farm, what's called a troll farm and or clickbait company that tries to put out, you know, tantalizing headlines or graphics or video, and then to get people to click it. But Mueller made this into a big espionage thing and a manipulation and sowing discord. And in his statements and in Barr's statements as well, they equated the Russian government, like the IRA, was an arm or linked to the Russian government. And there's no evidence and not even an allegation of that. So this court order, I was waiting for someone to bring that up. And congressman, if you go back and watch this all, I think it's about halfway through the morning one, he did bring it up. And of course, Mueller didn't answer. He didn't have any much of an answer. I was also waiting for someone to actually do that, you know, because it wasn't covered in our news. Even some of the congresspersons believe that IRA is an arm or a service of the Russian government. They actually think that. And so I was waiting for someone not to be careful, and sure enough, there were a couple that actually said the Russians, kind of like Rachel Maddow, you know, the Russians, and then it made it seem like they were talking about the Russian government. And so we'll have to see. There may be an additional filing now in this prosecution of Concord that the Department of Justice has to prosecute as a result of Mueller's indictment. They might be in trouble for some of the stuff that went on today. Mueller was kind of befuddled a lot of the time. He didn't follow some of the, he didn't follow a lot of the questions. And of course, if he couldn't answer yes or no, or I stand on the report, I can't get into that. It's outside my purview. I'm not going to speak to that. He had about 10 ways of saying he couldn't say anything, and that was about all 7 hours. I mean, we had to listen for about 7 hours of nothing but non-responses from him.
One of the things that he didn't say was that there was any evidence or proof that Julian Assange was fed the material that WikiLeaks released from Russia. He didn't confirm in any way, shape, or form this fantasy about Roger Stone meeting with Julian Assange in the heavily guarded and surveilled embassy in England. So that fantasy still sort of bubbles around with no proof as well.
He was asked one question, and he refused to answer. And this has been debunked, but The Guardian published an article that said Manafort met with Assange, and yet there's nothing in the register, the sign-ins, and certainly the surveillance. I mean, there's no, from what anyone can see so far, there's no evidence.
No pictures. Manafort. Nobody saw him coming and going. Nothing. None of the protesters in the front or the side.
Right. Nobody saw. And yet, when he was asked that explicitly, because it was a part of a big media push again to link WikiLeaks, Mueller refused to answer. And of course, it doesn't surprise me that he wasn't asked these, what I would call, trickier questions, because his report rests on a lot of vagueness. You know, by and large, by the way, Mueller was not even familiar with a lot of his own report. And so it looks like, to me, I think he was hired, he's nearly 75 years old, he was hired as the figurehead, because people thought, oh, you know, we can paint him as this pillar of integrity, and he's got all this credibility, and he'll be the figurehead. And then these other 20 prosecutors would be the sharp, and it turns out a lot of them were donors to Hillary Clinton's campaign, but a lot of them are just younger and sharper. And it seems like they did the work. They probably wrote this thing. And when he was really pressed on a lot of the report, he didn't know. He even made some real egregious mistakes because he didn't even know this report. But they didn't. Unfortunately, this is the bad thing. There's a consensus, a bipartisan consensus in Congress that to demonize Russia, for starters, to demonize Russia, and then also to demonize WikiLeaks as a tool or whatever their theory is, you know, working for Russia. And so you did have this one episode where they asked Mueller about WikiLeaks, and he echoed, or he agreed with Pompeo and called it a names and all this, and didn't bring up publication, journalism, nothing like that. Unfortunately, so that's the unfortunate thing, is that the Democrats have a theory, of course, that Trump was colluding with the Russians in order to be elected. But the Republicans, their theory now, they're going back to the Steele report, and their theory is that Clinton was colluding with the Russians. And so they both have this demonization of Russia involved, only they have their different candidates as the problem.
Different. Let me jump in here. Tell people, we're speaking with Colleen Rowley. She's a retired FBI special agent and division counsel. She was one of Time Magazine's Persons of the Year. She wrote a famous memo now, 2002 memo to FBI director, then director Robert Mueller, exposing some of the FBI's pre-9/11 failures. You wrote in 2017, essentially you warned people about putting their trust in what, this is an article, in Russiagate's mythical heroes, and that was a reference to Mueller and James Comey. What's the origin of that and the history of that warning? I know that isn't just something off the top of your head.
Yeah, I wrote that about a week after he was appointed, again, as this kind of figurehead, because number one, this was in the immediate aftermath of Comey's firing, where Comey leaked his memo, and it looks like it was kind of ginned up. And now we learned today that that Mueller was actually called in and had conversations. Now, he denied that he was being, he thought he was going to be special counsel, but there were conversations in the days before. The reason I wrote it is because it seemed like we were the United States of amnesia, and that everyone who previously knew Mueller's really rather sordid track record, and I mean, with me, it begins, you know, a day after 9/11, where he is standing up and saying, we had no knowledge that this could happen. We had no intelligence. You know, no one could have predicted a plane would fly, etc. He said this repeatedly. We would call up and say, well, no, that's not true. There was warnings or intelligence. In fact, in Minnesota, there was even a terrorist terrorist suspect arrested in August. The real problem was this intelligence wasn't shared, acted on, and in some cases, it wasn't even read. And so we were correcting this, and yet Mueller, here he's being held up as the pillar of integrity that he's never lied, like he's George Washington or Sherlock Holmes, etc. He went publicly for weeks, and at the same time that he was going out publicly and denying, you know, trying to protect and cover up for the FBI all these failures, at the same time, he was rounding up immigrants that had no connection to terrorism in New York City and then putting out press releases every single day showing, we've made progress in terrorism, we have 200 under arrest, we have 300. This went on for about a year. They were all, a lot of them were beat up in jail because they were said to be terrorists. And this all turned into an inspector general report afterwards that found this was to be wrong. When the Patriot Act passed, there were a lot of concerns about civil liberties. And Mueller went out to assuage the ACLU and other groups. He got applause. The FBI will never trample on your rights. We uphold the Constitution. Of course, the ACLU was applauding him. He knew when he gave those speeches. Now, this is incredible that people don't understand this. He knew when he gave those speeches that the United States was kidnapping people, putting them in black sites, torturing them. He knew that the NSA had turned on massive illegal surveillance, including of Americans. I mean, all of these John Yoo initiated things that happened within weeks of 9/11, Mueller was privy to. And yet he would go out and get the, you know, again, he's real in all those years which he gets lauded. Besides listening to him not answer in all these various ways, it's not in my purview, blah, 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 today. The most excruciating thing, I think, for me was to listen to the lauding by both members of both parties. You're a hero, you're the pillar of integrity, when you actually know that he has this really terrible track record. Not long after the roundup and stuff, we had the anthrax killer. Well, Comey and Mueller fingered the wrong guy, a completely innocent guy. The government had to pay $5 million. He's also a part of the Whitey Bulger fiasco, where the FBI framed four innocent men, and Mueller had a role in that in Boston. So there's this whole, I wrote this article, and I tried to, you know, I put a few things in there. I don't even know that much about Mueller. I just know some of the basic things. And I tried to remind people, why would you be putting all your hope and trust in Mueller, when, you know, his background is that he will essentially do and say anything for power. He's a real sycophant. And by the way, he's probably not the worst. He's not probably as bad as Bolton and some others. But the truth is, he really goes with the power. Can I just add one more thing to this? In all fairness to Mueller, he is a victim of the way this whole thing started, which is, I think the Republicans are right. It started with this specious Steele dossier that Democrats made up, you know, in order to be dirt on Trump. It started that way. And then it became the CIA, Brennan, and FBI, they did their intelligence assessment. So there's a seamless transition between the Steele dossier that gets leaked to papers and planted and all this, and then it turns into Brennan's ICA right at the time Trump is becoming president, and then it turns into the special counsel. So you get poor Mueller, but Mueller then takes on this thing, but he has to follow that narrative that began, you know, a year before he becomes special counsel. And so, of course, being the duty, he's being the, you know, sycophant or whatever, duty bound, he just follows along with that, and he does his best, or these smart, sharp attorneys working for him did their best to throw everything on the wall that they could think of, which... that's what we had to listen to today. And the question is, will any of it stick? Well, did the Democrats hit their home run as they were hoping to do? Or is it actually going to hurt the Democrats in the reelection? And I think the jury's kind of out on that right now, although I really don't think Mueller did too well. I think he came off pretty bad.
I'm going to reintroduce Colleen Rowley and apologize for the sound. I got to send Dennis Bernstein, a host, a little note. That was pretty bad, but I think it was important enough to hear this dissident view from an ex-FBI agent. And I find it so ironic that we have these Republicans who declaim the surveillance state when it does things to them. And then they turn around at the same time. There was the one occasion where they were, you know, decrying the way the investigation started, and at the same time we're voting on a bill that was going to not put the oversight into the FOIA, or not the FOIA process, but the, well, anyway, the surveillance states, giving, reining them in, basically. So they were decrying it when it affected this apparatchik on the island of Cyprus who was being surveilled. They don't need much to surveil somebody, so I wonder about some of this. Like I said, I don't think that our current AG is a reliable source to investigate it. It'll be as tendentious and as political as anything. So, but I wonder whether there is a there. About halfway through, going to return to a more general, or turn to a more general issue after this last 5 minutes with Colleen Rowley and Dennis Bernstein. I think he cracks wise here in the next moment. I'll say again, the opinions are those of the speakers. Don't forget about the rally at, I believe, 7 o'clock on the grounds of the courthouse on the Main Street side, typically. I'm sure it'll be there. They're going to erect some cages, and some people are going to stay in them overnight to protest against the policy of the Border Patrol. Haven't looked up Tom Hendricks again lately. Tom Hendricks is the guy that had that foul, despicable, obscene meme, photoshopped image. I'm not going to say any more about it. I've been trying to check every couple of days on him to see if he's going to be allowed to slink off into the slime they came from and retire, or whether there's actually going to be any proceedings against him, or whether he'll be suspended for a while or anything, slap on the hands. You know, last time I checked, nothing happened to him. This is associated with that private, quote-unquote, Facebook page that the Border Patrol and retired Border Patrol people maintain that was full of vile. You can find that more at Ryan Devereaux's writings on The Intercept. They actually did a bunch of archiving of that material, including the hideous piece of imagery that Tom Hendricks, who is the chief of the Border Patrol in Calexico Station, which I think is a major crossing. I'm not sure. All right. Bottom of the hour. I excerpted the YouTube video I was just talking about. That's from the Global Network Against Weapons in Space. All this space stuff going on in the media has made me think about it and review the militarization of space aspect of things, which is what these people, is their bailiwick. British guy named David Webb gave a talk titled "Encirclement of Russia and China with Space Technology Installations." It's well graphiced, so I commend your attention to the actual YouTube presentation. It's a new channel opened by this group, Global Network, and you can find them easily, just space4peace.org, spaceforpeace.org. They've been around quite a while. Demonstrations at Menwith Hill in the UK. All right, back to this last segment, 5 minutes or so, with Colleen Rowley and Dennis Bernstein from Flashpoints. They're doing a pledge drive at KPFA. But this is a live segment, not a representation or presentation of something that they're giving away as a premium, which they do a lot of during these pledge drives. And they're pretty successful at it, though they've had shortfalls this year too. $80,000 shortfall in their goal of $1,000,001, I guess, was, which is a small percentage, but I'm sure they need every dollar, as does WEFT.
It almost reminded me of, you know, the mafioso criminals. They march them into court in their slippers and their bathrobe, and they're sort of half crazed. Now, I'm not saying Mueller was half crazed, but what we've heard, you know, however long this investigation has been going on, one show after another, one network after another, but Mueller is strong. He's tough. He knows what he's doing. I don't know which Mueller they were talking about, but he wasn't there today.
Yeah, one congressman actually did that. He, you know, he fell into the mode that, oh, you're the hero in your background and you won medals in Vietnam, you're valiant, blah, blah, blah. Well, because this was a Republican congressman, he goes, but I don't understand what's happened to you now. And just right now you're acting out of sync with your past. You know, I found that really funny. Well, obviously this guy, you know, never cared about those things in the past. All of these, I think there were, there were a few inspector general investigations during Mueller's 12 years, including for national security letters that were wrong, and certainly, but there was at least two or three of those where the FBI was serving national security letters in a blanket way without, you know, dotting all the I's and whatever. But there was a few of those things, and it's like you can wait long and hard. You never heard any of the questioners. There was maybe one or two went after him. It was like the first time, and they went after him about his theory of saying that I can't exonerate Trump. And of course, that's true. That's not what the FBI has ever done. You don't take somebody as guilty and then say that you exonerate them. There were some cases in my experience where somebody even got publicly smeared as a result of an FBI investigation. Well, one example is the Hatzell case, where this innocent guy was fingered as being the anthrax killer. And you know how you get exonerated? You don't get exonerated because the FBI says, oh, you're exonerated. No, the only way you get exonerated is you have to sue. Like Hatzell did. You actually, the only way that I had people that were innocent, and they would say, hey, this isn't right. My son is in this case, and he's not even, you know, why are you, but, you know, this is bad-mouthing my son because he's in this FBI. I said, well, we can't do anything about it because that's not the business of the FBI. And there was one or two congresspersons who actually said, where are you coming from, Mueller? And that you say you can't exonerate somebody. Aren't we all exonerated until you're actually found to be guilty of something? And he couldn't answer that. That was one of the things that really I think the Republicans made some points on, because that's a huge fundamental concept in the Constitution, that you're innocent until proven guilty. Yeah. And this whole theory of exoneration doesn't even make sense.
All right. Well, this has been very enlightening. It is always good to have you on, Colleen Rowley. And it's good to be able to give an alternative perspective based on some in-depth information and your experience in the FBI and working really at the same time in the agency, in the Bureau, as Robert Mueller. So you have a lot of experience. We appreciate it. And we will continue to depend on you to give us that alternative view. I gather you weren't all that impressed by the press coverage.
Not the public television one tonight. That was really pretty awful. They just hammered this they hammered the thing on exoneration, that Trump is not exonerated. And again, if you had any understanding of criminal justice, you would understand that that's, again, they kind of debunked that today. So that was not good coverage. The one I was watching, Jonathan Turley wasn't half bad. He was on as and one of the things he said, which is that if they want to impeach, it's already too late. They should have already done this because the time is going to run out.
Yeah.
And, of course, that's the only person I heard say that.
Yeah. And he's quite a sharp attack when it comes to the nuances and the precise situation of the case. So he's been interesting on this. We're going to have to leave it right there. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
Sounds good.
And you are listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. And we're going to take a...
And then return to their Puerto Rico coverage, which they did a lot of this week. Colleen Rowley, I'm putting it out there. I have some... like I said earlier at the top, I think impeachment should go ahead and they should just say, well, we're not getting any cooperation. We have to go to the court to get any kind of document. I think if they were impeachment proceedings, they wouldn't be able to make those kind of arguments. So they could just say, "Well, we're not really impeaching. We're just doing this because we got non-cooperation from the executive branch." And as I said, also I also discount the Russian role a fair amount, and I don't think they were edited up enough to collude, really. And my thing about the Russian dirt at the dirt on Hillary, I call her HRC because I don't know her well enough to use her first name, right? Secretary of State Clinton. Um, if you're going to Russian oligarchs and Russians for dirt, you're going to get stuff that's connected to the Russian larceny and oligarchic malfeasance. And Trump, that's not his strong suit. What about could happen very quickly? What about your dealings with the oligarchs? And there were substantial things going on with the Clinton Foundation and Kazakhstani dictator. Of course, we know that the Saudis gave lots of money to the Clinton Foundation, too. So only for good works, though, of course. All right. So I think they got stuff, but they realized we can't use this. I've been saying that for a long time. I've never heard anybody else say it, so I keep saying it anyway. CU Speaks is a group that's around town. It's to provide talks designated to bring national topics to the local level to inspire community building in Champaign-Urbana. That's a great line. Neutral Cycle is the venue for a talk by Carol Ammons this week, 7:30 to 8:30 p.m. That's the last day in July. We have August days ahead. Presentation and a 30-minute Q&A. It's not a very big place, but it is connected to a coffee house, so maybe it'll spill over. Or maybe they'll have to have it outside if enough people show up. Third term as a state representative, Carol Ammons. There's a Facebook event on this, too, if you want to look around for that. And I'm probably a link through Carol Ammons' website. Either culturally, there's one of the penultimate, second last that means, right? Jake and Jack Center out at Mattis Park. Sounds at Sunset. Concert series, that's your Champaign Park District. And Mattis Park. Don't quite know where that is, but if you're interested in Jake and Jackson, they're opening a new park with the Bashful Youngins on August 11th, Henry Michael Park. Okay, did I have another PSA? Oh yeah, there was a curious one. I don't have any tools in my car that would be appropriate for this, but there's a used tool sale and swap 2019, Saturday, July 27th. That's today, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. This is at a place I've been meaning to go to, so maybe I should today. CU Woodshop Supply, 1401 Parkland Court, way out west in Champaign. And it's hosted by this group, the Woodshop Supply. I think they already do a tool lending. This is a flea market, garage sale, swap meet, mobile donation center, all in one place. Tools, hardware, and accessories. So if there's an odd tool, I don't know if they'll have a freewheel remover. That's what I need. I don't understand how it is a mobile detention center. They are partnering with the Habitat for Humanity's Restore. And they act as a donation place too, of course. Okay, you can find out more information on that by Googling CU Woodshop Supply, I think. And there is a Facebook event on this page, too. I just have enough time maybe to put on Dave Webb, a British guy who gave a talk in April. He's associated with the Global Network Against Weapons in Space, space4peace.org. I think it's worth your attention. As I mentioned, it's a rollout of a YouTube channel for this group, and it's also Bruce Gagnon's birthday, so I sent him birthday greetings and also asked him to put up a better link to this new YouTube channel so that David Webb and his graphic-laden display or talk can be accessed if you want to hear more of it, because I'm only playing a short segment of it. Encirclement of Russia and China with space weapon installations. I believe that's what we got. Opinions are those of the speakers, of course. All this space stuff going on, I have to respond.
I mean, we hear a lot in the UK, and I guess you do too, in the US, about Russian maneuvers, about what they're doing, moving troops around, flying aircraft. We're doing exactly the same, if not worse. We're bringing together all of these countries throughout Europe to face up along the borders of Russia. And one of those major installations is missile defense. A major provocation which comes from NATO and the United States. These military bases and missile sites along the borders of Eastern Europe are established in the name of so-called missile defense. NATO and the US have been planning for and developing military bases in Europe to support a missile defense system since 2002. And President Obama's European phased adaptive approach to missile defense was announced in 2009. And here we can see how these installations are lining up on the borders of Russia. It consists of, first of all, radar sites in Turkey, the UK and Norway, and standard missile 3, so-called Aegis Ashore sites in Romania. Romania was declared operational in 2016, and also in Poland, which is due to be established last year, but it's been delayed until 2020. And four ship-based Aegis interceptor systems hosted in Rota in southern Spain. The central command of the system is at the huge US base in Ramstein in Germany. There are also, so these are three of the NATO bases associated with that. One in Romania, Ramstein Air Base, and then hosted in Turkey, radar establishment. And this is the Aegis ship-based system deployed in the Mediterranean. They make these boats in Bath, Maine, which is some of you will know. And I think Bruce said, "Oh no, it's not one of these. It's not one of these that's being christened this week." So I'd like to point out that these bases are basically responsible, in the end, for the destruction of the INF Treaty, because it's these bases that have provoked Russia, and basically Russia's response was to try to respond to this by moving missiles close to their borders, and this has upset the United States. So both countries are accusing each other of cheating on the Intermediary Nuclear Force Treaty, the INF Treaty, and have now pulled out of that treaty. And it was that treaty which we fought so hard for in the 1980s to remove thousands of short, medium-range missiles from Europe, US missiles from Europe. That treaty is now gone. And we know that the US in particular is building a load more short-range nuclear missiles, so to be used this time as well, so-called low yield, that can actually be used in warfare. So things are looking pretty bad in Europe. I think there is, as a consequence of this, there is a build-up of a movement again starting in Europe. We needed this huge build-up in the 80s in order to get rid of those weapons. They were the ones, it was the people protesting about these things in Germany and elsewhere, and cruise missiles in Britain, that actually got Gorbachev and Reagan together to talk about getting rid of them. And now we will have to do the same, or perhaps even better than that, somehow or other. But this has got to be stopped. The other system which you'll know about is THAAD, the US High Altitude Area Defense System, and this is another short range, medium range system which is being introduced in the Pacific region, mostly in Japan, in Korea, and elsewhere. Guam, Taiwan are also future possibilities. Guam's already there. So you can see that lines up quite closely with the borders of China and also some of the borders of Russia too. Again, it's seen by Russia and China, of course, as an aggressive movement, whereas the US still claims it's a defensive system. Defending against who, they don't say. Well, they said originally it was against North Korea, but it's unclear as to North Korea has never threatened these countries, as far as I know. It's clear that these existing installations and those planned for Japan and Taiwan are aimed at China, who has continuously objected to the implementation of these systems and recently even demanded a halt to the deployment in South Korea. And these missile defense systems require space components. You can see the bases, they're there for us to, you know, we can see them, we can see where they are. But there's also a large number of satellites which are involved in using or involved in implementing missile defense. They detect, they track, and they target incoming missiles, as well as being used for general for spying. So there is a space component. So overall, as Roots Action has said, Trump has evicted Russian diplomats, sanctioned Russian officials, put missiles practically on Russia's border, sent weapons into Ukraine, lobbied European nations to drop Russian energy deals, left the Iran agreement, torn up the INF treaty, rejected Russia and China's offers on banning weapons in space and banning cyber war, expanded NATO eastward, added a NATO partner in Colombia, proposed adding Brazil, demanded and successfully moved most NATO members to buy significantly more weapons, splurged on more nukes, bombed Russia, Russians in Syria, overseen the largest war rehearsals in Europe in half a century, condemned all proposals for a European military and insisted that Europe stick with NATO. That's the situation at the moment. I think it's well summed up there. I don't know how much time I have left, but I did want to say a little bit about military uses of space, because that's obviously what we're about. Military has a number of uses for space. It uses it for surveillance, for communication, for global positioning, for missile targeting and guidance, for drone operations, and for missile defense systems, as we've said. And I think it's all of these coming together. It's easy to see military bases on the ground. You know where they are, you know what they do, more or less. You don't see satellites up in the sky. You see their ground-based systems that are associated with those, but they look a bit innocuous. There's no tanks, there's no guns, there's no army personnel. They're just these golf ball things which they use for communication. And all of this is to kind of go through what the US calls space, the US military, space superiority. They want to gain space through superiority through what's called situational awareness, being aware of everything that's around them in the environment, of the environment of space and on Earth. So this involves spying on huge levels and interception of information and so on and so on. I haven't got time to go through all these. I'm going to skip through a whole bunch of... These are some of the installations that are used in this system in Sweden and Norway. And if Agneta was here, she'd go on about this for hours, but unfortunately she isn't. but the one in particular I wanted to mention, and I think that will be going to, after this, he'll be going to Finland. And they have an exercise going on there called, what's it called? I've forgotten the name of it, but it's, no. Anyway, it will be centered on this place called Sodankylä in northern Finland, which is a space center. It's an Arctic space center. Here's the picture of it here. And what it does is it receives messages, it receives information, data from a European satellite system called Copernicus. And this Copernicus system has a number of Sentinel satellites, which monitors the Earth. I think I'm running out of time, but it monitors the Earth environment. As you can see, it's kind of used swathes of information, and it goes on to collect those and pass them on to the European Space Agency and then to the European military operations. So it is part of a military system, and it's interesting that this particular exercise will be focused on Sodankylä at this time. It highlights the importance of space in the, as seen by the military. Another operation is called MUOS, which we've been involved in the global network. This is in Sicily. They have a receiving station there for the information. It's a global system. There are four of these ground-based systems around the world. We went to the one in Sicily and visited the people there objecting to it. It's called MUOS, the Mobile User Objective System, which is a UHF frequency SATCOM system for the US Department of Defense. And this is part, again, of a global data gathering system around the world for sucking up huge amounts of information. Also for plugging into all of these different communications systems around the world. Has its own ways of plugging into those systems by hacking, by gathering it from the fiber optic cables, but also through their own geostationary satellite systems, which passes on from one to the other. Here's the undersea cable network. And wherever those cables come to ground, in fact, even when they're underwater, submarines can actually lay on top of these cables and intercept them there as well. So there's no end to the kind of work that can be done here with the right kind of, or the wrong kind of engineers, I should say. They're also, of course, assisting with the drone operations, and Europe is being very much involved in that. I think I should stop But I did want to mention this, this thing called Gilgamesh, which is an NSA geolocation platform called Gilgamesh. It can turn a virtual base tower transceiver attached to the bottom of a drone into a fake mobile phone receiver. This forces a target's mobile phone to connect without their knowledge and allows the mobile's precise location to be delivered. These systems can be attached to the bottom of a drone, and they will then simulate a base tower or transceiver. It looks like it's right. Looks like it's one of those places where your mobile phone connects to. It will then get people to connect their phones to it, and it can get information from them without their knowledge and pass that on to the NSA or whoever wants it. And this information, as you can see, there's a network. It goes from to Ramstein, Germany, and then there's a direct fiber optic cable connection to Krieg Air Force Base, where the drones are flown from. So huge connection with space operations there. UK also has operations in Britain. We went there last year to Croughton, which is the top right-hand side, which is a huge intelligence base, which is being expanded. It costs hundreds of billions. To gather and help sort all this information out. Menwithil is the second one down. That's near where I live. That's the NSA spy base I mentioned earlier. And then there's also one in Cornwall called Bude, at a place called Bude, GCHQ, who work with NSA, and so on and so on. So it goes on. These are the Croughton connections where we were last year. We were told about all of this kind of stuff that's going on. There's direct fiber optic link with the Camp Le Manoir in Djibouti, and the drone activity that goes on there. And if I can also mention this thing called Argus. I won't mention it. there is a resistance, though. Some people, you may have seen this Project Maven on artificial intelligence for the military. People working in Google have actually resigned over it, and they've cancelled the program. Well, at least I think they've cancelled the program. It's never quite clear. And then there was the first space protest here, a citizen-led exploration group, the Autonomous Space Agency Network. They launched a weather balloon in 2017 with a tweet which was directed at Trump. I did want to finish on this. The message says, "Look at that, you son of a bitch." And that's an interesting message. It's in reference to the Apollo 14 astronaut Edgar Mitchell, who I think spoke at a global network meeting back in Florida sometime. Is that right?
Spoke at a protest at
Cape Canaveral. He was the sixth man to walk on the moon. He once said that when you view the Earth from space, you develop a global consciousness, an intense dissatisfaction with the state of the world, and a compulsion to do something about it. From out there on the moon, international politics looks so petty, he said. You want to grab a politician by the scruff of the neck, drag him a quarter of a million miles out, and say, "Look at that, you son of a bitch." That's the message.
I guess that's okay for radio. Could have said SOB. So an astronaut was a kindred spirit and being revolted by this weaponizing of space. That was Dr. David Webb of England, you could tell that. He is this is from the bio at Space for Peace. He is the convener of this global network, board of directors. He retired university professor, engineering prof, who switched to peace and conflict studies. He's also co-founder and director of Praxis Center, for the study of information and technology for peace, conflict resolution, and human rights at Leeds. Retired in 2012 to focus on peace campaigning. He's webmaster of the GN website, so he's the one who would be putting the link to this talk. It's about 37 minutes. We heard about 15, the concluding segment. He was presented the Webmaster of Space Award. Sounds like an internal thing. Currently chair of the Campaign for Nuclear Disarmament, CND. That's a long and storied group in the UK. Chair of the Yorkshire Region, CND, and vice president of the International Peace Bureau and patron of the UK Scientists for Global Responsibility. Dave at space4peace.org. If you want to ask him a question. Helen Caldicott's an advisor to this group, as is Michio Kaku. Some interesting people. I mentioned Bruce Gagnon, whose birthday it is, and he's sort of one of the early movers and shakers in this group, Space for Peace. What is the actual title? We're going to Doug Henwood straight away. Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space. Yeah, they were against that plutonium-rich launch that happened some time ago. Fortunately, was successful and didn't blow up and hit scatter into the upper atmosphere, which it could have. All right. Opinions are those of the